Hope everybody had a good New Year, or at least a good holiday with family and friends. Very, very privileged to have joining us this morning Judge Ruben Castile from the United States District Court here in Chicago. I'm sure many of you are familiar with him. He served on the court with great distinction for many years, and in addition to serving on the court, has served on the Sentencing Commission for how long?
I did an 11-year term, Judge Williams.
Shuttling back and forth and doing great work for the country. And so we're very pleased to have him with us this morning. With that, we're ready to proceed with our first case, Abraham Lincoln Memorial Hospital versus Sullivus, 112809. Mr. Coons?
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Tom Coons. I represent the hospitals in this matter. At issue in this case is whether taxes that the hospitals were assessed by the state of Illinois and that they duly paid to the state of Illinois may be denied for reimbursement purposes under the Medicare program. Hospitals in this case are reimbursed under a reasonable cost system. That system is designed to assist hospitals that are particularly small and financially vulnerable. And under the reasonable cost system, Medicare has long recognized that the operating costs of a hospital, including the all costs of doing business, have to be reimbursed. Included among those operating costs are taxes, and specifically a subset of taxes, provider taxes, which are taxes assessed against types of healthcare entities that do business in the state.
Are these costs attributable to beds? Is that how they allocate?
In this case, yes, Your Honor. The tax was assessed at a rate of $84.19 per occupied bed day. It made no difference who occupied that bed during that time. It could have been a Medicare patient. It could have been a Medicaid patient. It could have been an indigent care patient. But for each occupied bed day, the hospital was assessed a rate of $84.19 a day.
Now, currently they're doing that different, aren't they? Aren't they? Don't they just take out the Medicare bed right away?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Under the current law, I'm not sure what the tax system is in the state of Illinois. At the time, this was an $84.19.
I don't mean the amount. I'm talking about segregating out Medicare beds versus Medicaid.
For purposes of Medicare reimbursement, Your Honor?
Yeah, they don't even count.
The Medicare, what happens in the system is that Medicare will pay its fair share of these costs depending on its utilization of services, which is measured largely based on the beds or the occupancy of the hospital by the Medicare patients relative to the total patient population. So that's how the Medicare reimbursement of these costs is being calculated, or would be normally calculated.
And your specific complaint is about the refund, right?
That is correct.
How is the refund calculated?
A refund would just be a reduction in the cost. Again, so if one had a cost of $100 and there was a refund of $90, one would have a cost of $10. And then that would be applied to the Medicare program in this instance.
The refund is defined as amounts paid back, right?
On account, yes.
And here the tax was not even due until this amount was paid.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So how can this not be a refund?
Well, if you look at the state statute, obviously the tax was not due, as you say, or the tax was not due or until the refund or until the payment for costs were the Medicaid services were made. Let me go back if I may. The Medicaid program got these monies, but in turn it paid the hospitals for Medicaid services that the hospitals were providing to all manner of patients. And so the nature of these of the payment was for the hospital services. It is true that the timing of that, the tax was not due until the payment for the Medicaid services had been furnished. But the CMS people were very much aware of this. They were not at all concerned about that at the time they examined this tax program. This was a matter of no consequence as far as they were concerned. And I might note that in the refund regulation itself at 42 CFR 413.98C, the timing doesn't appear to be a relevant factor. The CMS Medicare regulations specify that a refund can occur pretty much at any time, and they talk about refunds that might occur in a wholly different accounting period. So as our expert said, there has never been a situation in which CMS has expressed any dissatisfaction with a tax because the Medicaid payments were made close in time to that. And indeed, if you look at the refund regulation itself, it seems to be that there is a disconnect between what they view as a refund and the timing. We think that if you're going to look at whether there is a refund, you really have to look at what the payments made by the state of Illinois to the hospitals were for. And in this case, they were plainly for health care services. They were not a refund of taxes. If you look at the state plan amendment, if you look at the state legislation, if you look at the correspondence between CMS and the state of Illinois, they went into great detail in describing the health care services that would be paid for as a result of the state plan amendment. These were not in the nature of a refund. These were in the nature of health care services.
If we were to adopt your view, wouldn't it behoove every state to set up a fund like this one? Because as I understand it, the state could get matching funds from CMS under Medicaid, have the hospitals get reimbursements under Medicare, as long as the states didn't call them refunds.
Your Honor, virtually every state does have such a plan in place.
So does your position mean that CMS has to double pay whenever a fund like this is established?
They're not.
So that once the FMAP under Medicaid is paid, then it becomes a reimbursement under Medicare.
There is not double payment, Your Honor. Medicaid is paying its fair share of the tax through its reimbursement system. Medicare is paying its share, depending on its utilization of services for those. But there's not a double payment for this one cost.
But there is a difference between Medicaid and Medicare, isn't there?
There is plainly a difference, Your Honor.
And it seems that, obviously, the Medicare is totally federal, and it's a dedicated fund coming from the Medicare tax, I suppose, whatever we call it, whereas this Medicaid is a general fund appropriation, and it's shared with the state. And I was confused a little bit with your piece where you focus so much on Medicaid without talking much about the Medicare difference. Because I can understand what you're saying. You're saying, well, wait a minute, this Medicare, this whatever you want to call it, the tax, is separate from what comes back because that's the tax is a tax and the payment is for services, I guess, rendered. And you say they're not related, whereas obviously the government says they're totally related. And what's given is taken away. And that's really where the focus is.
Well, the effect of what the government's position would be is that the tax costs would be eliminated, and they would effectively mean that the operating costs of the hospital are not fully reimbursed. And Medicare has said for a long, long time that these costs are reimbursable costs. It has said that in the provider reimbursement manual. It is said in the sense that tax is stated that taxes are allowable without any provision for offset. It has, in countless cases, allowed these these taxes to be paid without any provision for offset. It has processed thousands of cost reports without any provision of offset. And in this case, for the first time, they come out and say there has to be an offset. We think the position is both illogical and impermissibly retroactive.
When the payment is made, your position is that's an operating cost of the hospital, right?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
But yet your position is when the state refunds part of that initial payment, that is not lessening the operating costs.
Well, it gets down to, is this a refund? I mean, mm-hmm. that's the very nature of the dispute.
Mm-hmm.
And we would argue that it is not a refund. That these are, if I may give this example. When I was a federal employee,
mm-hmm.
I paid taxes to the federal government. The federal government, in turn, made payments to me of my salary.
Mm-hmm.
One was not a refund of the other. These are operating on separate tracks, and I would argue that this is much the same way.
Mm-hmm. And yet there are times, using your example, when you receive a refund, then you have to declare that the next time around.
Plainly. I mean, for example, mm-hmm. among the cases that we cited and mm-hmm. made reference to are FICA cases where mm-hmm. there's been an overpayment mm-hmm. of FICA taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, there's plainly a refund. And plainly, to the extent that one has a tax, that is not an incurred mm-hmm. cost at that point because mm-hmm. it's being reduced by the overpayment. But we believe that there's a disconnect here. Again, what is interesting, for example, mm-hmm. is that we've got hospitals in the state of Illinois that were receiving these Medicaid payments but paid no taxes. The linkage here is not nearly as dramatic as CMS would like it to be. We've got taxes that long-term care hospitals were exempt from, that governmental hospitals, charity hospitals,
mm-hmm.
All sorts of hospitals in the state
of
Illinois were exempt from paying. Pardon me?
All of Cook County.
I don't know the status
million,
of Cook County.
Million, isn't that the
I think they're a governmental hospital. I believe they would, but certain governmental hospitals, and it had to be in a jurisdiction under a certain population. I'm not sure whether Cook County qualifies.
They don't pay the tax. So this, I'm just curious, is this all small hospitals throughout
principally
the state?
Smaller community hospitals, yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, they're strapped as well.
Yes, they are.
And of course, we read about doctors and Medicare reimbursement and how stingy that's getting, and doctors are threatening to go out of business. I don't know where the status is of the smaller hospital, but I recognize they're probably a little more vulnerable than the big ones.
Well, they've got a particular reimbursement system, the reasonable cost system, that isn't in place for most hospitals, but is in place for these types of hospitals, particularly sole community hospitals and others that provide services.
Speaking of this reasonable cost determination, why is the hold harmless determination under Medicaid relevant for Medicare's reasonable cost determination?
It's relevant.
Don't you agree they're separate for these purposes?
I agree that the programs are separate, and I agree that the general legal principles applicable to each are different. But when you have a factual determination made by the same agency the hold harmless determination is effectively there is not a refund determination, that it's a determination that the services being furnished were for health care services. The payments being paid were for health care services, that they were not for the refund purposes. If this were a refund, CMS would have to disallow the tax as being in violation of the hold harmless provision. So in that sense, the factual determination, we believe, is relevant. Again, another point that we would like to make is that we've got a situation here where CMS has come in and totally reverse field. The position they're taking here is certainly contrary to the position they've taken at any time prior to this case. And I see that I'm encroaching on my time for rebuttal.
Do you want to save your time, Mr. Coombs?
I would like. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Mr. Mayer or Meyer? Mayer? All the way from D.C., I take it.
Mr. Ronald, but my colleagues are all the way from Baltimore, so I don't think I can claim any additional mileage. May it please the Court, my name is Peter Mayer, counsel for the United States Government, here the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Before I get into the body of my argument, I want to correct something that my opponent said with respect to the record in this case and the stance of the agency on the issue presented today. Both in their brief and in their remarks this morning, the hospitals maintain this policy that we're espousing in this case represents a total reversal, of course. And I think my opponent today said there were countless cases in which HHS had approved payments similar to those at issue. That's just simply not the case. All that the hospital's experts said in the proceedings below was that when she was at CMS and her tenure there ended in 2003, she was unaware of any case in which the department had taken the position it's taken here. She didn't say that the department had taken the opposite position either, nor could she. After all, in their reply brief from the district court, the hospitals conceded that this was pretty much an issue of first impression. At page 20 of their reply brief, they said, CMS's prior manual provisions and administrative determinations did not directly address the precise issue of whether a tax on hospitals paid to a state must be offset by the amount of Medicaid payments made to the hospitals. Now, as to whether there are any instances where the agency has taken a different position, I can tell you this much. Plaintiffs never put anything in the record like that, because if they had, you can be sure they would have highlighted it in their brief below and highlighted it to the court. There's a world of difference in someone saying, I don't know of any instance in which the agency has taken the position it's taking this litigation, and saying the agency has consistently taken the opposite position. That's just not true.
So there have been no decisions by the Provider Reimbursement Review Board to find taxes like this one to be allowable costs?
On information and belief, no. And I'm certain, given the number of PRRB decisions the plaintiffs cited that were pretty far afield, if they had one that close, they would have put it up front and center. I certainly would if I'd been in their position.
Since 2005, isn't there a different formula and process?
There is. That was something else I wanted to clarify, Judge Mannion. This is kind of a vestige of time.
Yeah,
there are two cost years involved.
First impression, this may be the last impression on this particular process.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't want to minimize the amounts involved. There's about $4 million, $4.1 million involved, $3.9 according to the department. And given the number of plaintiffs involved, that adds up to about $175,000 per hospital. That's not chicken feed, but it's also not the biggest sum in the world in terms of how the Medicare program works. But I think this court has an opportunity, just as Judge Myerscough did, to send the right signal on an issue like this. And I think the court's questions indicate that they understand what's at issue pretty clearly. There's always a risk of oversimplifying the issues before a court, but I think in any case involving Medicare or Medicaid, an attempt at oversimplification is worth a shot. Here, I think that the government's position really boils down to two questions. Question one, may the Secretary, in assessing a hospital's reasonable cost of care, do so by determining its net cost as the cost it actually incurred, which is the statutory term? Secondly, assuming that the Secretary may make that net cost assessment, did she properly take into account the fund payments that these hospitals receive in calculating the net cost of the hospital's tax assessment, given the fact that one wouldn't exist without the other? The hospital's position, as I understand it, is that you only take offsets for things that constitute something that is technically a refund or an overcollection under the HHS regulations. The government's position, this is one that Judge Myerscough endorsed, is that you have to look at all of the costs that are actually incurred. And actually incurred means everything, not just what you pay, but what you get back. And you can argue all you like about whether the payments matched up and whether these are technically refunds or not. But I think to a certain extent the hospitals are urging the court to look solely at the trees and ignore the forest. And the forest here is that you have these two systems, the tax assessment and the payments, and they are inextricably linked.
How many states have funds that make payments to providers to support services to Medicaid populations?
You know, Judge Williams, I don't know of any other states right now that are doing this. This was a fairly short-lived experiment, as I understand it.
Is the only difference here that the fund payments were made before the tax was collected?
Difference from what, Judge Williams?
In how states view this payment system.
I don't think so. I mean, HHS's position would be the same whether the refund payments came before or later. It does make it a bit more transparent that they didn't have an obligation to even make their tax payment until the refund was in hand. But if they're linked, they're linked. If the system had been set up the other way, you pay your check and then you get something back, we'd still say they were inextricably linked. And if they're inextricably linked, certainly it goes to whether a cost has actually been incurred.
So is that where you draw the line? Because one of the questions I have is, where is the line drawn on finding a connection between the tax and a fund? You know, don't all state provider funds rely on tax revenue for some purpose?
I know,
but... And is now everyone in jeopardy if we fine for the agency?
No, I think what distinguishes this case, Judge Williams, is that there was a state law in Illinois that said if this system isn't approved by HHS, you've got no obligation to pay your tax. That's pretty heady stuff. And I might add, in all of the discussion in the hospital's opening brief and in their reply brief, there is no discussion of that Illinois statute that basically links the duty to pay the assessment with essentially the receipt or the right to receive a payment of some sort back from HHS. Now, as a matter
of... So you're saying the linkage is in the statute itself?
Well, what the district court found and what CMS found were that there are three things. First, you have communications from the state of Illinois saying you don't have to pay until you get your money. The second thing is the statutory provision that underlies that. And the third thing is the timing issue. But I think any one of them would have been perfectly sufficient to justify what the secretary did here.
How did the state of Illinois calculate what a hospital got back?
They did that based on Medicaid utilization. So the plaintiffs are right in this sense. The tax was a tax on everybody, whether they were Medicaid beds or not. The payout was based on Medicaid utilization. But it's worth noting that in terms of these plaintiffs, all of them got refunds back that were in excess of the tax payments they made. So to the extent that some other hospital might have the beef, it's not one of them. And the beef would be strange anyway if they say we paid more in the tax than we got back in a refund. Well, that disparity would be usable in terms of showing that you actually incurred a greater cost. After all, everything wasn't refunded back to you. You were still out of pocket some. You'd be able to apply that as a cost, and it would probably be determined as a reasonable cost that would be reimbursable under Medicare.
If they got an excess back, let's just say, for simple terms, that they paid $85 and they got $100 back, is that extra $15 offset against some other cost?
Well, I suppose in a macro sense it would be true, Judge Mannion, but we've never tried to trace those kinds of things.
Well, I know. I just am curious, though, when we talk about this is all gain, everybody gets more than went in. I don't know how that happens when the tax only raises so much, and that's the max of the fund. As I understand, the fund does have other sources of revenue.
And in fairness, the fund also isn't exclusively dedicated to making these hospital access improvement payments. It does go out some other things, too. There's nothing in the record on this, but I think my opponents will confirm. But the lion's share of the money in the fund did go to payments of this kind. What we're saying basically boils down to this, that in determining the actual cost that a hospital has incurred, you shouldn't just look at what happened to the right pocket, which is where they paid their tax assessment from. You also have to look at the left pocket, which is where they put the check that they got from the hospital assistance program. When you put both pockets together, you can determine the cost that's actually incurred. And that, I think, in fairness, is the difference between the plaintiff's position in this case and the position of HHS.
I keep coming back to the present, what's going on now, because it seems that that Medicare is isolated from Medicaid because you identify the beds, I guess you talk the occupied beds, however it works, distinguish between Medicare and Medicaid. Isn't that correct?
That's right.
Right. And so, again, this is just for this 2 years.
That's right.
As it is now, they seem to have a more efficient.
I think they abandoned. I mean, this is an Illinois system, after all, and I believe that Illinois abandoned the system. And after they abandoned the system, the hospitals could claim payments of this kind as a cost for Medicaid purposes. They couldn't do that for the 2 years in question, which is why I think they were looking for the money under Medicare.
Now, we give less deference to the Secretary under the reasonable cost statute and regulations. So what prevents us from finding that refund means a payment back for something and that the payments out of the fund are for specific and separate purposes?
Well, I think the refund question is helpful, Judge Williams, but it's not really dispositive. The language of the statute, after all, is actually incurred. And the regulations say that these things, refunds, overcollections, credits, and the like, all are within the notion of what you consider in terms of things that are actually incurred. But there's no suggestion that that's an exhaustive list. And I think what really ought to matter is how it functions in principle. Are we right in applying a net cost approach? And on that, Your Honor, it seems to me that you do give a fair amount of deference to the Secretary in terms of her ability to offer a reasonable construction of the statute that might be construed in more than one way. I happen to think we're construing it the best way, but I think it's pretty clear that how she's construed it here is certainly one plausible reading of the statute.
So your basic position is your net costs determination is reasonable and is not arbitrary and capricious.
You've got it exactly right, Judge Christie.
Now, one case that gets tossed around in the briefs is this Kindred case out of Missouri. Is that up on appeal to the Eighth Circuit?
No, I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. But let me say a moment about Kindred.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kindred really helps us because in that instance, what was eventually determined is the pool payments the hospitals received from the state of Missouri had to be counted.
Mm-hmm.
What the plaintiffs seem to be saying is, well, there were also some federal payments involved there, and nobody protested that. Based on my experience, that's a fairly hazardous way of interpreting a judicial decision based on an issue that wasn't raised and therefore never addressed by a court. There are lots of times, I can tell you, from the standpoint of the government, where we have a case where it's decided by a district court, and there may be multiple issues on which we could take up. But for one reason or another, we take up one or two and we don't take up the rest. That doesn't mean we're endorsing the reasoning of the district court or the agency in each of those instances. We're selective. So I think it is quite hazardous to say if their position was thus and so, they then would have taken an appeal. The fact that they didn't take an appeal shows us that their position was thus and so. I just don't think that's right. Unless there are other questions from the court, we're prepared to submit the case for the court's disposition.
Dan, any questions? Thank you, counsel. Mr. Coombs, and he has how much time?
5.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And why don't you begin with the Kindred case, because as counsel pointed out, it didn't address the state payments made to the hospitals. It was a sort of an implicit decision that the payments did not have to be offset.
Well, I think it was a little bit more than implicit, Your Honor.
And it was never really addressed in that case.
Kindred involved monies that came from the state that went into what the hospitals set up, which was a pool. And then the losers under the tax system were paid money by the winners under the tax system, if you will. And so then it was only those pool payments from one hospital to another that were at issue. In the decision, the administrator expressly noted that these were not Medicaid operating revenues at issue. It distinguished these facts, or these pool payments, from Medicaid operating revenues. And the case squarely had the issue of what about the Medicaid payments coming to the hospitals. The winners, for example, and even the losers received Medicaid payments directly from the state. Those were never an issue, even though they paid taxes. There was no offset at issue. So the case was squarely before the administrator. The issue was squarely before the administrator. The administrator purposefully, in our view, distinguished the pool payments from the Medicaid payments, stating again these were not Medicaid operating revenue. So we would disagree with the government's position that this issue hasn't been addressed. Furthermore, if you look at the Florida case that was cited in our brief, the Minnesota cases, these two involved either indigent care or Medicaid monies that were there was a fund that was being set up, taxes were being imposed to fund this, the taxes were being paid to the state, the monies then came back in the way of indigent care payments to the hospitals. At no point did the administrator or the PRB suggest that there should be an offset in those situations. And while Mr. Meyer is somewhat dismissive of the testimony of Ms. Kanner, the former chief counsel of CMS, as former chief counsel of CMS, she was certainly in a position to know what was going on out there, about how these cost reports were being processed. But beyond that, we also had the testimony of Mr. Sheehan, who helped prepare the cost reports for the providers at issue here, but who, together with his colleagues, processed literally thousands of cost reports around the country. He said he was aware of no instance in which the government had taken the position they're taking here. This is, contrary to what the government believes, is a very pervasive practice. As we stated in our reply brief, currently 46 states and the District of Columbia have provider taxes in place. So this is this is not unique to the state of Illinois. This is something that happens around the country. And this is a situation which has been up before the administrator, often with no requirement that there be any offset applied. We believe that the position being taken here is flatly inconsistent with that position. And we simply do not agree that the government can take the position it is taking without being found to be arbitrary and capricious. If there are no further questions, we submit.
There are none. Thank you. Thank you for both traveling so far to give us your fine oral arguments. We appreciate your briefs and the thought put into this case. We'll take it under advisement, and I'll call the next case.